A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Hilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
And the return of Jules Gill.
Hello.
Who's been away for way too long, months on end, he has.
I grew my hair and then I shaved
and
off
you
again.
Lost your hair. Just having a big
went
old
into
trek.
The wilderness, found myself, didn't like him, came back.
Jules, are you a fan of Fortnite?
Oh, yeah, unbelievably. I mean, I rock my Fortnite t-shirts, I'm dabbing everywhere.
Where is the time you're not dabbing?
Do you know, actually, and this is not me just trying to do a bit. I didn't actually know what Fortnite was for the longest time, for about a year until after it came out. And this is somebody who works quite intensively in the game.
Oh, that's most of the industry.
Because somebody just said, oh, it's just exactly like DayZ. And I was like, but for kids. And I was like, well, that doesn't appeal to me then.
But the whole version of that initially was that weird like wave-based thing where you had to defend stuff. This isn't at all what the podcast is, but what were you going to say?
I can't remember. I was just going to say, how did you manage to avoid that in this office?
Because of the fact that I am very good at tuning you out.
Thank you. Yeah, you are, to be fair. I always come over, I'm like, Jules, and I know you're not listening to anything on your headphones. I know there's no music going in there, and I just forcibly remove them from your head.
Do you know what the thing is? I'm actually listening to one of your voiceovers as well, so it's actually like a double up. I still tune them both out.
You can't tune me out, though, which is why we're here now.
That's very true.
I had to get him in the room. But yeah, so Fortnite had the whole end of season 10 thing, big live event, which I still think is brilliant. I sort of just wanted to take what happened with Fortnite and use it as a leaping off point to talk about the general idea of live storytelling and the role of stories in games and things like that.
Now, to just clarify this point, this season game ending thing that you were telling us about before, I watched the clip before we came in, and it seems that like they've destroyed the original map.
It's so cool.
I don't understand how that works. So the game's got multiple maps and areas, or is it just got
one big map?
Yeah, one big map with a lot of different areas.
So when it says it destroyed the original, does that mean that it's been built on that much that the original map has now just become a part of a much bigger world?
Well, that's the thing. So the thing that happened, if you haven't seen the clip or whatever, is that at the end of season 10, every single player that was like, you know, logged in at the time or whatever, saw a rocket take off in the middle of the map, which connected with a big warp thing in the sky and resulted in this cataclysmic world-ending event that threw all the players off the map. They then watched the game itself kind of just disappear into a black hole, like players and maps and everything all went into one big black hole. If you were in the lobby at that time, all the menus fell apart and they all went into the black
hole.
That's
amazing.
It was really, really well done. I think it was a really cool idea. And so right now, time of recording, if you go on any of the official streams or anything, it's literally just still the black hole because they don't know what's going to come next.
Oh, right.
So it's either going to maybe be Fortnite 2 or whatever the hell. But I think that as a general idea, it's an incredible thing to do. Like, because apparently about 6 million-ish people watched it. It was like 4.5 on YouTube and 1.2, I think, on Twitch. And it's like, that's just a great way to have everybody see one big story event. So I guess just as an opening thing, what do you think of that in terms of being like a unique thing?
Oh, I think that being at the cusp of an event or something like that, I think it's fascinating because one of the best things about video gaming as a whole is from, you know, our youth before the sort of rise of the internet, it was a case of word of mouth would spread. The legend of could you get Muv if you went and like pressed A under the truck or whatever a million times. Mm-hmm. All these like video game secrets, the urban legends that grow and grow and grow. This is basically taking that and applying it to a generation that's never been more connected, but still making it feel like an exclusive event. Yeah. You were there seeing it happen. Mm-hmm. You were there in the lobbies, but what if you weren't? You'll never get to experience that, but you'll get to see other people's reaction, and I feel like that exclusivity
that
is amazing.
Like, I am, because obviously like Fortnite's reputation is all over the place. I don't play Fortnite. Like, I used to when it first came out, but I don't really care about it anymore. But like in terms of them doing this thing, I was saying to Josh when we did the news on it, like it makes me think that they've just made like a life memory for a whole new generation of gamers. Like when those people get to the ages that we are, the old creaky past 30 for me and Jules, but not you, Josh.
Not yet.
Oh, you're gonna get one day.
Your hair is just gonna
all
go
hair's
like,
gone.
Hair gone. You know, I'm a metabolism like, gone. Those KFCs are going to catch up to me, man.
Excuse me, what are you trying to say? You trying to say that once you get 30, you get fat?
No, I'm just saying that, you know, my diet isn't good in that.
You're fat ice, mate.
Yeah, that's what they call me, big fat ice. But anyway, the whole thing with this is that... obviously, the whole thing with Fortnite, like I said, they've sort of created, like you said, this exclusive event that I think a lot of people will talk about going forward. I think it kind of hinges on what they do on the other side of it. Because they've, like, the thing is, right now, Fortnite is offline, ostensibly. You can't play it. Obviously, they can take this risk because it's free. But, like, you know, like, if you try and log into Fortnite right now, all you get is the black hole thing.
That's only just hit me. So they're taking off one of the biggest selling and most profitable games right now, ever made, and you can't play it.
Not right now.
But then imagine the influx of players who will come back.
That's right. From a marketing perspective.
Oh my god!
This has just hit me at how brilliant this is.
Yeah, it's absolutely genius because then you get people like us who haven't played Fortnite in a long time,
who couldn't care less,
talking about. Well, we do because we're making a podcast.
I care about this.
We care about this instance. We care about this instance of, you know, making memories and, you know, these experiences. So imagine all the people who watched this or played it and were in the moment when the servers went down and the map disappeared. Imagine how many more players are going to jump in for when it comes back online.
Oh,
imagine
because they're going to want to see what's
exactly
changed.
It's not going to be just the people who were playing. It's going to be lapsed players like us who want to be a part of that moment, and we'll jump back in probably if we have time.
Plus,
and get in there
right now. There's about 50,000-60,000 people on the official Twitch channel just watching a black hole because they're waiting
just in case
something
happens.
And like the thing is, if you follow up on it on the Chinese list of the on the Chinese version of the Epic Store, and there's a thing that says like the event will start on the 14th, which is obviously right now today.
Right. Okay.
At the time of recording, it's still a black hole, but assumedly something's going to happen by tonight or whatever, because obviously there's a financial reality to Fortnite being offline or not being played.
Do we know how much they're sort of air quotes losing by being?
I don't.
Offline.
I tried googling that. I don't know what its average take is.
I guess they probably wouldn't publish that sort of.
No, but it's like the thing is that I think that the core of it is that they've done a major creative risk, and you never see that from a company as big as Epic. Because although Fortnite doesn't really have like it has lore, but it hasn't really got a story. I love that they've done this big story based event, or at least it's being discussed as a story change. You know, it's their way to reboot the island or reboot the world as it is.
If they come back, in my opinion, the best thing for them to do would be to announce Fortnite 2, because I feel like you're getting to the point now where it's got level based stuff, hasn't it? And like, do people hit level caps and stuff like that in this game?
I mean, there's a cap,
there's definitely leveling.
You get loot
and
you get and you'll get the character, the skins and stuff that you want. Like, if they want to make a ton of money, they just go Fortnite 2, everything's reset and you've got to start all over again. I mean, it's the franchise and the annualization of video games that you see. Like, you get your team to the top. And next year you've got to start and get their team to
really
the top.
It's really weird because like obviously like something like Rocket League's been going as like a single platform since like 2015 or whatever. Yeah. Like Fortnite's obviously been going since 2016, and they've done multiple seasons. This is like the end of the 10th season, but the season just tends to be a reset of the different skins you can get. And then sometimes they change things in the map. Like they've done stuff with different like warp holes appearing in portals and like bringing different items in from different timelines and things like that to like spice up the game map itself. But they've never done anything like this where they completely like make everything disappear and whatever. But if you're Epic, this is a way to sort of, you know, take it offline for a day, let people breathe again, and then you launch with something new, whether that's a new map.
Do you know what it reminds me of? And this is a very strange reference.
Go on.
Do you guys remember when Coco Pops wasn't called Coco Pops?
Oh, I can't believe that's right. I took a drink before you said that. Wasn't what I expected. Almost choked and died live on a podcast. Okay.
So back in the day, Coco Pops, for some unknown reason, changed their branding to become Choco Krispies.
Yes.
And their theme song used to be, I'd rather have a bowl of Coco Pops. That used to be what it was. Then it changed and they tried to fit the new name in. So it's, I'd rather have a bowl of Choco Krispies. So basically what happened is they got you to phone a number to say, do you want to change it back to Coco Pops? Mm. They got an inundated amount of calls, like with people paying like a couple of quid each time just to vote to say, I want it back to being Coco Pops again. It was a ruse. They basically conned you out of it because they had no intention of ever keeping it. And this Fortnite thing is exactly like that.
It's
drumming up interest of something that wasn't even dwindling. It wasn't doing badly.
But it reminds me of the Pasta Hut change that went back to Pizza Hut. We had Pasta Hut for a few months.
Well,
reminds me of Opal Fruits and Starbreeze as well.
This is the thing. This sort of Starbreeze? Marketing First. Gimmick First. Has happened so many times before. You mentioned the Coco Pops. You mentioned Pasta Hut, which I forgot forgot even happened. Obviously, I think the biggest one's New Coke, when the company released New Coke, purely so people would complain and want the old original formula back, and then they brought it back, then sales skyrocketed again. Mm-hmm. This is like a tactic I think a lot of people outside the gaming industry use quite a lot in marketing for products, or bands use it all the time. I follow the 1975, and every time they do a new album cycle, they literally do what Fortnite did. They close all the social media down, turn all the images to just pitch black nothingness, and then they'll reboot a day or so later with all of the new aesthetics and gimmicks and songs and stuff. So, but we've never really seen that in video game terms. We've never really had the platform for that to even happen. We haven't even had live service games for on this sort of level where they're constantly changing at a sort of base level. And we've got seasons and stuff, but we have had things similar in the past, like World of Warcraft and subscriptions and things that have set the foundations for something like this to happen, I would say.
Because I was going to say that the World of Warcraft one is probably the first instance of a gaming event. Because the way that it started was that there was a boss, and it could kill you by applying an effect onto your party that would just drain your health immediately. It would be basically like hyper poison, let's just call it. And the problem was is that the devs, for some reason, didn't code it so that the ability could actually affect your pets. So that meant that when your pets would be infected, you'd bring them into a non-hostile area where you can't engage in PvP, but because of the poison effect, it would damage and kill people inside of an area where they had no idea how to counteract that.
Right.
So you'd end up with literally entire servers being full of just dead bodies because no one being able to get in there and resurrect
their
characters.
That was intentional, though.
Well, that's the thing. The devs have gone on record saying it wasn't the way that they planned it, but it did allow them to kickstart a new sort of massive gaming event, or a world event, as they coined the term for it. So basically, they turned a huge PR disaster into one of the biggest selling points of the game, because everyone walked around going, why is my character dead? What's going on? Mm. Then they ushered in this whole, I believe it was something to do with the Leash King. Something like that, wasn't it? Like a necromancy.
I've not played much Warcraft.
Don't know that this one off the top of my head, but I know that it had something to do with the dead are rising, you've got to avenge them sort of thing. So they just turned a huge blunder into a massive positive.
Yeah.
Because Warcraft especially, they've done things where they've had obviously the Christmas events, everyone goes and meets up at certain points and you trade gifts and stuff. And then Destiny has, any sort of live service game tends to transform their hub world or something, and you get that shared experience. But I can't think of hardly any games that have done story events, or they've done meaningful animations in front of people. Like one of the only other ones, again, I brought this up on the other video, but is Elite Dangerous. And I love that they designed an entire alien invasion, but only one player saw it. And it's one player was just driving around, all the lights on their ship just shut down. They were like, what the hell's going on? And this giant ship just came in above them. And it was only that one person saw it, and they managed to record it on whatever they were playing, and they put it online. And it was like, guys, has anyone else seen this?
They're so lucky that they actually recorded it.
I know. I guess if you played it as someone who never saw it, it's well, that work's kind of wasted then. Yeah. and someone else has to go and do it. But I think in terms of ways to implement live storytelling, it's an entire new front of narrative that we just haven't even seen. And it plays into the idea that gaming is an active medium.
You have to approach events like that with the same thing that you're trying to do with any sort of product in this day and age, which is you have to try and get viral marketing to work for you. It is, if you went out there and just said, hey, look, this game's got some DLC coming out, blah, 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 here's a trailer. Yes, you might get thousands and thousands of views and people going, oh, wicked, I can't wait for that. But it's a case of, it might just be bypassed by the casual fan. They might just not see it. But if you make it ingrained into the game itself, or where you log in, there is a war going on, and you're coming in and going, what the hell is going on for this event?
Yeah.
And you're going to get more invested in it because you feel like you're shaping part of the game's narrative rather than the game telling you its narrative in a different form.
I might argue the inverse of that in a way, because although that is very sort of engaging and it does encourage you to stick around, you can shape the world. I do think there are so many possibilities that are just kind of being underused when it comes to games as a service, and having these living, breathing worlds that you can change, you can morph into something interesting and have these unique events that make these memories. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I can also see from a developer or a publisher perspective of, you have something good already, you have Fortnite, which is so popular. Mm-hmm. Even though this is very much a marketing trick and even a gimmick potentially, it's still a risk because you're still messing with the foundation of something that players love and have responded to and want to continue playing on. That original Fortnite map, it's changed massively since it first launched, but it's still something distinctive to that game, and people love it. People are familiar with the areas, so that suddenly if they do change that to something completely different, then you might risk losing people along the way. But for me, it's sort of, it's worth the risk because you do then get those interesting new possibilities. Mm-hmm. You get to be exciting, you get to be daring. And a lot of people, I think, like you said, will still be invested in it as long as you just take that step and give them something good in return. Mm-hmm. As long as you're not taking anything away, as long as you're not replacing it. And then I do think it would work sort of like New Coke or like Pasto or something where you get to have something new and exciting. And then further on down the line, you get to double up, you get to bring the other maps back, you get to cash in on that sort of nostalgia, as it were, and people will respond to that as well. It's an easy win.
All those examples, like New Coke and Pasta Hut and whatever, all those ones, they all reverted back to what they were. Yeah. So it's like history kind of dictates that as much as a bigger risk as this is, Fortnite shut down and we're going to try something drastic, like that, you know, black hole thing will undo itself and what'll fade back up is the same map again. Mm-hmm. And then there's already fan theories online that have kind of looked into, because Fortnite events have involved superheroes and alien entities and stuff coming
Thanos,
through the map.
Didn't we?
They had Thanos as like a bonus mode, but they've had random figures appear in the sky and things like that before that have flown through the map and then disappeared again. And there's already a fan theory that there's seven previous visitors and seven cycles to the world, and this is the seventh one or whatever. Then the whole thing is just one giant loop, which is in itself kind of it's not an intentional comment on gaming loops, but that's kind of what it is. And it's that's the thing. They have lightning in a bottle with Fortnite, and we're 3 years later. How much can you really risk that without changing what Fortnite is?
Well, this is the thing. Speaking about lightning in a bottle, there's one game at the moment that I feel is on the cusp of doing something incredible if it does what a lot of people are hoping it is, and that is Red Dead Redemption 2. Mm. With the introduction of these air quotes zombie characters and these dead bodies that people are finding with the bite marks and stuff like that on, Rockstar have managed to seed the world without any information or any lead up, but have managed to get people speculating so much that it actually has seen a massive increase of people logging on to go and find these bodies of themselves. So what they've done is, by just putting in a few mistextured models or whatever, even if it was a mistake, they've managed to drum up interest by doing nothing. Mm-hmm. If they are to capitalize on this, then I bet you anything Red Dead Redemption 2 will shoot straight back to the top again.
If that was actually stealth releasing Undead Nightmare 2 or something. And
They do that, then the next couple of weeks they maybe have people, NPCs saying something like, oh, there's been reports of an outbreak or something like that in this area. You go there, you can't find anything, or maybe you find one or two people. But the moment that somebody finds a living zombie enemy to kill, everyone's going to go nuts.
I would love it if they just stealth dropped in a horde of zombies in one part of the map who kill a bunch of players, and then they then share it from there.
The perfect place for that is in that bio area. You know, when you're going along and you can hear all the people whispering sometimes in the swamp, the really swampy bit. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you just go there and you hear something, you go along, you think, it's just another one of those little creepy things that it's not going to amount to anything. Mm-hmm. Horde of zombies there and you're like, oh god, it's like Undead Nightmare Begins something. And this is the perfect time of the year for them to do it.
Totally. I mean, that would be great if they've seeded it in a way to then capitalize on the Halloween rush or whatever, because Undead Nightmare 2 has been rumored for a while, but they haven't done anything official on it. But I guess just expanding it into the role of stories in games. It's weird because I've kind of thought that maybe the very idea of a story in a game is something that was more like a flirtation across the 2000s, because it went away so much this generation. There are only a handful of games that you can point to that are genuinely well written. It's this generation's been have doubled down on mechanics so much more, especially this year. Osley, our editor, was asking what's the best video game story of 2019, and we genuinely couldn't think of anything. And it's just you've got Observation, Plague Tale, Mortal Kombat 11's campaign is brilliant, Days Gone's kind of solid enough, but then it's nothing like God of War 2 God of War or Red Dead 2.
Yeah, it depends on what you're looking for, I guess, because it's I would consider a game like Blasphemous to have a great story, but it's one that's told like Dark Souls in piecemeal around, so you're actually filling in the narrative yourself, so
you
the experience is what you get out of it.
Something that you can hold up and go, oh man, you've got to play this. Why? Because you need to play this.
Control
story
was good.
I had Control down here. I think Control is immaculate world building, but I don't think it nails its story beats, but that's closer to something that
the storytelling is very off-putting to a lot of people. I can understand that because it's not spoon-fed.
And in terms of what actually happens if you laid it out on cards, it's well, this happens, then this happens, then this happens.
Yeah.
There's three events in that whole
thing. You actually just go, oh, it's actually relatively simple. Yeah. It's told in a completely disjointed manner.
Yeah, parts of Control are absolutely outstanding, but that's the thing, trying to think of really great, I said, God of War, Red Dead 2 tier games. For me, that's overall a reflection.
It's got to be Red Dead 2 for the story of the year. For me, so far.
From last year.
Yeah. Oh, it is from last year. Yeah. Wow.
That has flown by. I know. You would think of that before, but it's in terms of 2019 games that can kind of hang, for the most part, this has been a year that's doubled back down on game mechanics.
Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, I said MK11's campaign.
Yeah,
I think
that's
brilliant.
Probably.
But that's the thing. There's so many games that are mechanically heavy, Apex Legends, Borderlands 3, Ghost Recon, Anthem, Far Cry New Dawn, Ultimate Alliance 3, Surge 2, and Crackdown 3. they dwarf the amount of games that are known for stories.
Yeah.
And I wonder, that's the whole thing to bring this all back around. I wonder if that's because the way that games tell stories needs to evolve. And something like the Fortnite thing is a way for it to evolve, like an active way of telling a story. Mm.
For me, I'm not sure if it necessarily needs to evolve, because like you said, even though they are much rarer than they used to be, we still get those sort of conventional story-heavy games like God of War, like Red Dead Redemption, which do, you know, heavy lifting when it comes to kind of like cinematics and authored, you know, finely tuned and finely delivered stories. But at the same time, I feel like ever since the start of games as a medium, we've had a different sort of method of being able to tell stories, and those are the emergent kind of experience that we get up to as players, like the ones that are unscripted, the hassles we get into every single morning. Ewan has a new story about what he's done on Red Dead Redemption online, and he'll come in and relay this tale about how he was trying to track down this bounty and how it went wrong and the characters he met along the way, and none of that's scripted. All of that is just emergent. There might not even be any lines of dialogue, but that doesn't mean the story itself is like, it's kind of bad or worse off than a more author one. I feel like when we share our experiences, oftentimes they are in terms of the things that happen to us personally. And I guess that's kind of what happens with this Fortnite thing, even though it's a grand sort of thing that everyone has experienced. If you're in the game or watching, each individual person experiences that in a different way. We see it through someone else's screen.
There was a player that was on top of the rocket when it took
someone's off. On top of the rocket, you know what I mean? And I think that that's what separates that kind of storytelling out from both just this cinematic focus, but also just kind of talking about games as rote mechanics. Because even though I do think gameplay loops are kind of overtaking to the point where it's just kind of it numbs you, and you've got nothing else, you just turn your brain off and you're playing through a game, and that's fine, because that can still be enjoyable and it can distract you from whatever's on your mind at the time. But at the same time, you've got this completely other different branch where it's using those mechanics and using the environments and using the characters to, you know, have things happen to you that won't happen to anyone else, or at least not in the exact same way. And then that in itself becomes a video game story.
Oh yeah, I wasn't necessarily saying that, like, that's sort of like way is worse, but it's just like, like that's the thing. Like, they do evolve with the tech.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Apology.
Do you know there was one example of gameplay-esque story driven that I liked, which was actually shown in Battlefield 1. Do you remember they introduced that whole thing of like the three stages of hell or whatever it was called, where basically like you would go into a conquest,
the operations mode.
So what happened was is that you'd go through one map and then the winner or loser would actually dictate the outcome or the setup of the next map. Yeah. And then it would go on and on and on.
You got like cutscenes.
Yeah, and you'd have a little cutscene and narrative. I loved that because it felt like it was, even though it was the same story being told every single time and with only like two choices each one, I was still like, this actually makes me feel like I'm part of a war effort with a natural beginning and a natural conclusion. And I feel that a load of video games lose themselves in this persistent war. Yeah. Like, For Honor is a great example. Mm. They told you that you would be playing as these different factions and they would could win areas and take over and control the land and stuff like that. But it never happened. One side never dominated enough to go over there. But I would love it if they actually made it so that, say the samurais took over one area. Maybe like if they took that out and held it for like 2 days or something like that, then an in-game event would literally lock it, as in like a fortress would be there and the Vikings, if you were playing as them, you would start with half health for like the rest of the thing until, you know what I mean? Like to make it feel like you were telling a story.
Like For Honor tried to do that, but the its in-game economy didn't benefit it. Like you could just break it with the microtransactions.
And that's where we come down to. Mm-hmm. It's like the storytelling only happens if there's money to be made. This Fortnite stuff only is happening because they know that they're going to make an absolute buttload of cash doing it. Mm-hmm. Like the Elite Dangerous example that you've gone, the word of mouth has probably meant that loads of people have gone on and played it. Like there's no incentive for them to go out of their way and say, hey, look, here's ushering in a new age of this, if it's not going to net them an absolute buttload.
That was going to be my follow-up thing, is like, is there a financial profitable reality to a story in a video game? Do we actually need stories in video games? Like I would miss them. I do miss them right now this year.
Some games obviously can't exist without their narratives. Like it would be impossible to think now of the God of War series without having a huge branching narrative. Like
it was a Sony first party hack and slash game where you just play as a dude. Like, you always got like a sentence to set you off.
I'm just going to say that Dynasty Warriors is coming into the fore now. Like, Dynasty Warriors has told the same story, the romance of the three kingdoms, for nigh on 20 years now. Like, it is the same story every single time.
And it's not known for its story necessarily.
But, yeah, because the fact is you just know it from the stages and the hack and slash.
Well, so that would prove my point. You could totally have franchises. Like, that's the thing.
But
like,
if you changed it,
well, that's what I would say.
Everyone would go mad.
But it's like, I guess, like, because, like, you know, you go back to the 80s and 90s video games. You got way less storytelling. You get like enough of a motivation. You know, this land needs saving, this villain needs killing or whatever. And you just go, and we enjoyed those games for what they were. But it's like across the 2000s, obviously, you know, 3D became HD and you got that sort of influx of like cinematic, you know, storytelling and cutscenes and stuff. But that's kind of gone away. Like it's still there in spots. Obviously, it's still there. But like this generation, everything's become way more mechanic focused with live services and loot boxes and everything else.
I'd agree with that. I don't think that the industry sort of doesn't need stories or whatever to like sort of be a success. Because I still think there are... You need diversity in like the kinds of games that you're pumping out. And if everything was just mechanically driven and sort of like, you know, gameplay loop driven, you would eventually get sick of them. I feel like you need stories because we respond to stories so much. We love talking about them. We love like talking about characters and we love making videos about them. I feel like there's just sort of a part of human nature that I love sharing, you know, stories, whether they're authored or, you know, made up by your actual gameplay experiences. But at the same time, I think the kind of facade of needing a game story, that's gone away. Like you said, the age of, you know, the Xbox 360 generation. Every single game, no matter what it was, tried to have a story, and we tried to go and ape Hollywood. We tried to be cinematic, and eventually we just kind of thought, you know, why are we doing this? Video games excel when they're being video games. You don't need to hammer in a story to try and justify them as kind of art or worth playing. You don't need that element because the core elements that are unique to the industry and the medium, they can excel on their own, and that's ultimately why people sort of come to them in the first place. Yeah. You know, I'm not coming to any kind of modern military shooter that wasn't Call of Duty in the late 2000s for its story. There was just, you know, that was just there because it had to have a story. You know,
but the campaign's really good.
For Call of Duty, but I'm talking about like rip-offs, like Battlefield 4, right?
I don't remember a single thing about it. And I played it all the way through, and I, even as I was playing, I was just like, wow, this
that
is skyscraper dry.
Yeah. Fell over really nicely.
Yeah.
Hey, that was really good. That was multiplayer, wasn't it? That happened in multiplayer as well.
The only time that I actually got excited about a military shooter storyline was Homefront, because it was written by the guy who did Red Dawn. Was that right?
I don't know if it was, but it was definitely the premise.
Yeah, there was some writer that came on and did like a really, really good job of it. And the story itself was really interesting. I won't say it's good, but it was interesting.
Speaking of like
the gameplay was crap though.
Speaking of Homefront as well, like Spec Ops: The Line, like that game's gameplay was like formulaic and totally fine. Everyone just thought it was going to be a really arbitrary, basic, you know, Gears of War style thing. But Walt Williams' story is immaculate and like is still talked about now, like all the time when we do any lists about subversive games or underrated or overlooked or whatever. It's always Spec Ops and it's always because of the story that lasts longer than a series of throwaway game mechanics. Ghost Recon has already been forgotten about because Breakpoint is crap.
I think that's a really, really actually good point.
You've not seen it. Whoa. You've been away for two.
Well, you have been away for a long time.
I was out for 2 weeks before it was like, hey man, do you want to get play Breakout? And I was just like,
is that your impression of me?
No, I was going to swear, and I had to stop myself.
Yeah, beforehand it had John Bernthal, and now it's just burning.
That's good. That's really good.
He hasn't even got a dog.
You practiced that a little bit.
I've not.
In the mirror.
Like taxi driver.
You're joking with me. Anyway, you're going to say something, I believe.
I can't remember.
About throwaway mechanics.
The point was, yes, we forgive, obviously, you know, games, a game that has really great mechanics. If it's got a naff story, you're kind of just like, oh, well, yeah, it's serviceable, but the real meat is on, you know, the gameplay aspect. Yeah. But at the same time, we do that inversely with great stories, like you said, in something like Spec Ops: The Line, where we will talk about that, and then we will use the greatness of the story to justify mechanics that aren't so good. So I feel like, to me, that kind of sums up why stories are kind of still necessary and will never sort of go away, because when you have a great story game, it doesn't need to have great mechanics to be good. And if you have a great mechanically driven game, it doesn't need a great story.
It's weird, isn't it? Because they're kind of like, they are almost mutually exclusive. Like, it's like you'll put up, like you said, you'll put up with a good story. Sorry, you'll put up with bad gameplay mechanics if the story's good, or vice versa. But it's like things like I've got down like microtransactions, live services, season passes, games as a service. They're all things that get away from storytelling. They're all things that don't benefit three act structures or building to climactic points or whatever. And like, it kind of gets in its own way. Like, it's like, I feel like the gaming industry has become entirely a gaming industry, like this generation. And there's only a handful of games we can hold up as like really worthwhile stories.
Yeah.
But then it's like, especially this year, it's been very mechanically focused. But
yeah, I was just thinking about the huge disappointment that a lot of players experienced when playing Battlefront 2, because that story was bigged up as being an essential part of the Star Wars canon.
We talked to the writer. We did.
We did indeed, and he was very happy with the work that he'd done. It was just a shame that the implementation of the story was quite weak overall. But I felt that detracted so much from the end result that I really wished that it wasn't included.
Yeah,
and that's so sad to say that. But it just goes to show that if your game mechanics as well, and obviously we know all the rest that went on with Battlefront 2 with its loot boxes and all that stuff. But if your story is bad, then don't include it. If the Call of Duty saying, oh, we're not going to include a campaign in this one, and people went nuts for it, but then they turned around and just said, listen, you little oiks, if you finished the campaigns, maybe we put more of them in.
Yeah, that's true. But then, like you said before about
that was just me. That's me doing impersonation, not me actually.
That's literally
with them,
what Activision sound like. But you told me that was the whole thing with Black Ops 4. And then, you know, Jules said the whole thing about, like, you know, there has to be a financial reality to putting it back in. Modern Warfare is getting its campaign again because the gap made by Black Ops 4 made it a desired thing again. So they almost needed to take it out to make people go, hey, hold on, no, we need that.
And
then they brought it back again. Whereas you probably wouldn't even get a Modern Warfare reboot with a campaign if it wasn't for that stuff.
No, and it was the same with sort of, I guess, Titanfall as well, when Titanfall original didn't have sort of a conventional campaign. It had that kind of story-driven multiplayer thing that didn't really work. And everyone was like, no, it's just bare bones.
People
so we need a campaign.
To you in multiplayer, but not a story.
That was kind of a one that worked out quite well, though, because then, you know, Respawn did put a campaign in Titanfall 2.
Which was actually brilliant.
It was actually really good, you know?
Perfect. I adore that thing. Because one of the things that I was going to say after listing all the microtransaction live service stuff is like, do you think that like overall this sort of, like this sort of changing of the guard to put more impetus on mechanics hurts the medium overall, or can gaming still excel through just really solid mechanics? Obviously, that used to be the case with the arcade mentality in the 80s and the 90s. But for me, if you're going to start putting feet in cinematic presentation across the 2000s, you should carry that through and keep going. And there are games like God of War, Red Dead, Death Stranding is coming out soon, and everything Naughty Dog does. The Last of Us 2. I think the reason The Last of Us 2 is being talked about so much is because it stands out more now.
Yeah.
It's like, here's some characters that you love and you know, and here's a story that we're all going on together. And that's just such a powerful thing.
I don't like how much it's become that it's almost a risk to do a story-based game now versus how much of a demand there was for it in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Like you were saying before, every game had its cinematic experience, and maybe it was so full of itself that it overcompensated and we had a glut of it. And now we're into the mechanics thing where it seems that you stand out more if you have a fully fledged non-online component, non-loot box centric mechanic and are just doing a story. People are just kind of like, right, what?
Because like Control, like I said, an immaculate game in the vast majority. I don't like the way it ends, but I think the vast majority of that is phenomenal.
Right.
But that hasn't sold at all.
Because I was just going to point out to you, there's a reason why it is listed as a AA title. At some point, somebody looked at that and were just like, okay, your gameplay is great, your graphics are great, when they're not stuttering, your characters are great, and your story is convoluted, but still brilliant. Why are you not a AAA title? Mm. What, you have all the makings of one, but why are you not? Oh, yes, it's because you're not going to make us and Fat Cat over here an absolute bank.
Maybe. I mean, like, that was the whole thing with in Remedy's case, breaking away from Microsoft after Quantum Break, because that didn't seem to go down very well. And then they ended up, I forget who they hitched up with to do Control with.
Oh, my God.
505 games. And it's just like, they, like you said, they kind of went with almost like a AA publisher.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's weird the way it shook out.
For me, I struggle with sort of, you know, because Control hasn't really sold all that well by the looks of things.
Like,
yeah.
Sucks.
Which sucks.
It's great.
But I don't want to make the sort of EA issue of, you know, making... putting that on the single player, like, alone, like, being, just saying, oh, I didn't sell because it was single player, no one cares about stories without, like, the marketing is, there's a lot of other elements that you have to sort of, you know, consider before you just go straight to the story and just say, well, no one wants to play a story-driven game, so, you know, now they're dead.
But that's what people are going to see. That's what their bottom line is. It's like, it didn't sell. What was that game about? This is what it was about. That doesn't sell.
At the same time,
God of War, Red Dead.
It's always sort of, you know...
Yeah, but God of War and Red Dead were handled by huge, huge publishers and given loads and loads of boosts and, like, money. They're both from previously successful franchises.
Mm-hmm.
They were both original in their concept back when story-driven games were a big thing.
True. I think with them, I keep hinging a lot on God of War and Red Dead because I think they are like, they're the zenith. There's so much money in those games, especially Red Dead 2, and it still pulled it off. And it's like, but yeah, like, it's weird. Like, obviously those games are so labyrinthine and humongous, and they still kind of, Red Dead has its multiplayer component, but like the amount of money that was put into the advertising, for me, Control's biggest issue is its messaging, its advertising. We barely knew it was coming out.
I'll tell you what as well. I feel like at this point, I don't know if publishers and developers are interested in making up a new franchise that people will care about in the same way they do Red Dead or sort of God of War. Like, I was looking this morning and Uncharted 4's sales, or maybe it was all the sales. Anyway, it was something ridiculous, like 16 million copies.
Yeah, right.
And those are single player games. That's a single player sequel. But people cared to see the end of sort of Nathan Drake's journey.
Yeah.
People stuck with the developers and the publisher for that long and wanted to see these characters, you know, get a send off, and that translated over to sales. It's when you expect those kind of mammoth success stories to happen the first time around for you to deliver Control, and then you look at it and you say, why didn't that sell 5 million copies? Oh, I guess it must be a mistake. No one wants to buy single player games. I guess we're going to can this and play Anthem 2.
Psychonauts is a great example of that as well. It's a game that was reviewed so well by so many people and yet didn't shift because... And I'll let you fill in the blank because I don't know. Because they don't know. Because Microsoft didn't know. No one knows why it didn't do. But it just didn't hit that sweet point. And sometimes it just happens. Mm. You think you've got lightning in a bottle and you have this amazing concept, this amazing idea, and yet somehow it just doesn't take off. For love nor money, you can't
figure
out why.
But it's like a lot of the industry, like, you know, it is geared toward, like you said, like in terms of the risk, the money that it needs to make back. Like, it's the in thing for the biggest publishers to make games as a service, to have recurrent spending methods or models across months and months of game time. And you don't have that if you just do a story. And I think they're at the top, if they're crunching the numbers, that is like, well, why would we bother rolling the dice and putting all this effort in, all this development time, to make something that's only going to really have a window of a couple of months, as opposed to making something that could monetize for the whole year?
Well, look at Anthem. Anthem is still selling like hotcakes despite everyone and their mum absolutely bashing
horrific.
It this is the thing, like it's being critically panned now, and even the player base is sort of turning on it, and yet they're still playing it because that's I don't know why. It's just hard to break the cycle. They went from Destiny to that, and now they'll probably jump to Borderlands 3 because there's similar qualities to that, and then maybe they'll jump to another. It's just looter shooters.
That's like the whole idea, like, because there is some people absolutely adore looter shooters and just play them for as long as possible. I remember when like something like Borderlands 3 dropped, and it's like within the first 24 hours people have hit the level cap and things like that.
Same with
Destiny. It's just like they're going to live on those games as much as possible. But then obviously once any publisher realizes how much money that stuff makes, it then filters through to everything else. To roll it all back into Fortnite and bring in stories back into it, I think having a live event story makes it more financially viable because it makes people check in, it makes them play something on a longer timeline waiting for the next thing to happen.
Oh, it would make me more invested in a game if I knew that if I logged in that something might happen that was out of the ordinary. Like, what puts me off the most about games as service at the moment is, even though people say you only need to log in for like 20 minutes a day just to go and get your daily rewards and tick some boxes and stuff like that, why should I? give me some actual sort of like reason and weight to behind my thing, because at the moment it feels like I'm just literally clocking in to go to work.
Literally.
I don't want my game to be work. Games as a service means that it's like, yeah, it's retail service. Like I'm working in a bar. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's a service industry.
Do your shift every day.
And this sort of links into what you said a little while ago, Jules, about when you're doing sort of, you're having those mechanically driven experiences and you're just sort of playing through I'm really hungry for chicken, I think. checking off checklists.
Yeah.
If that doesn't impact the world and you're not actually changing anything when you're doing that, what's the incentive to do it? Just because you get more XP, just because you know you get a level up your character. That's, to me, not anymore at least. That's not enough incentive to actually, you know, spend 20 minutes in a game. If I was clearing out zombie nests in, you know, Days Gone, for instance, the only thing that changes in the world is that then there's no more zombie nests. Yeah, one really comments on it. It doesn't change how I interact with the game. It doesn't change the environment. Everything kind of just stays the same, or at least it's a black and white situation where there are zombies, now there aren't any zombies, and that's all you're really, you know, doing. It doesn't fundamentally alter the experience in any way, and it doesn't include a kind of story. You're not progressing, really. There's point A and there's point B, and it's kind of like whatever happens in the middle, who cares?
It makes you wonder, just very quickly, it makes you wonder if we only care because we were around for the 2000s. If there's a whole new generation of gamers that are coming up on Fortnite and everything else like that, on games as a service and microtransactions and whatever, but we had Bioshock and we had the spotlight shone on agency in a game and why do you care what you're doing in this game? And that just went away.
I feel like the one thing that really needs to change soon with this whole games as a service model is that they need to find a way of allowing player interaction to go back to the person that's making the game. If, for example, you're logged in, you got your daily spin on the old loot grind or whatever, but it gave you, as well as all of these, a single coin, and that coin or whatever translates to a vote, and that vote allows you to say, what would you like to see in the next update? What would you like to see that? Then I would log in every day and do something like that, because I'd feel that my vote would therefore be put in with many other to shape the way that it's going. Would it mean that a new DLC comes early, or would it be that a new character skin gets unlocked if we all vote for this thing? That would make it feel like there's much more of an engagement, and you are therefore, as we were talking about at the very beginning, shaping the story of it, because you are saying, I want this is the direction we want to go.
Mm-hmm. Which is what, like, I remember with Square Enix tried to do with their augment your pre-order thing for Mark and Divine.
I mean, that was awful.
But that was the whole
way
point.
To take my concept.
My point is,
what they would do, though. That's a cool idea. It's really greedy.
No, my point is, though, that they tried that before launch, before you were invested. They tried to make you pay more before you were actually in it, as opposed to giving you something up front and then continuing a story across, you know, X amount of time with you, with their whole player base voting for different things to happen. That would be a great way to do it. And like, that also proves the power of stories, because like you said, it would get you playing. And even reading that thing on Fortnite this morning, I was like, I kind of want to play a little bit of Fortnite. I thought for a second, I didn't do it.
The thing is that about game developers have to find a way of making their games not feel like a cycle, but making it feel that there is a start and an end to there, because the moment that you start seeing things in their rotation and seeing that I'm just getting in to grind to get more loot, then you start just going, well, what's the point? There is no end game. But if you tell somebody that there is something coming in the distance, then you start thinking, hey, this actually has a purpose. We're working towards something.
Yeah. Even FIFA, which I suppose you could argue is one of the
most...
I want
to see where you're going with
this. I think it's quite a good point. I hope it is. Please let me know. Even with FIFA, which, you know, is sort of one of those rote franchises that comes out every year, people say, you know, nothing's really changed, and that is kind of true. That recently implemented a story mode, but even before then, you had a career mode that people would invest a lot of time in. It wasn't, you know, a big cinematic thing, but it gave you enough justification, enough sense that you were on a journey, or you were building something up, you were building up a team, to your team, you were getting them promoted, you were getting them relegated, you were signing new players, you were going into the future, and you were sort of building an enterprise, as it were. And I think genuinely that's partly why that game succeeded before you had the online portion, before you had Ultimate Team, because it wasn't just the same match over and over again. It kind of was, but it wasn't framed like that. Right, it wasn't just, you know, game for the sake of game. It was a match that contributed to an overall season success. You were winning points, you were losing points. There was still a framework of a story there, quote unquote, that you were working like around that mm-hmm. sort of made it more satisfying than just rote gameplay.
I think it's just overall it's narrative investment, and it's just like I remember Yatsi Kurosho for Escapist said that the vast majority of games this gen you can put into two buckets: either they're games that inspire you, make you feel something, or they're games that numb you. And like, and it's true, like the whole numbing thing is something that keeps coming back over and over. It's like once once you're hit up front with a certain gameplay loop, most AAA games now will just let you do that loop over and over and over and over again. And that can be incredibly satisfying, but it also is numbing. You can only ever go downhill from there, as opposed to something in a story context or a narrative context building to something else. And I would always say that's why something like God of War or Red Dead 2 matters more than a Ghost Recon, an Anthem, a Borderlands 3, and Apex Legends. But yeah, let us know your thing down in the comments below if you're watching on the video side, or come find us on social media if you're listening along on the audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And Jules Gill.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.